You're listening to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, episode 58. Welcome to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, where we bring you engaging conversations about wildlife conservation from all across the globe. I'm your host, Matt Podolsky. Today in the show, we are continuing with our theme of environmentally focused film festivals and the potential that these types of events have to impact conservation issues. We'll be talking with Brad Forder, who is the programming director for the largest environmentally themed film festival in the country, the Environmental Film Festival in the nation's capital, which will be taking place March 15th through the 26th of this year. Brad will be sharing some background on the festival and giving us an insider's look at the selection process. He will also be turning the tables on myself and fellow Wildlands filmmaker Neil Paprocki midway through the interview to ask us some questions about our film Bluebird Man. Yes, Bluebird Man is one of the films that we'll be screening at this year's Environmental Film Festival in the nation's capital. Not only is it screening at the festival, but it has been selected as the winner of the Eric Moe Sustainability Award, one of the four top awards given out at the festival each year. So Brad has agreed to become the interviewer for a portion of this episode to ask Neil and myself some of the questions that he had after watching our film. We're very excited to have Brad on the show today, and of course we are deeply honored that our film was selected for this top award. Let's jump into the conversation. All right, we're here with Brad Forder, who is the programming director for the Environmental Film Festival in the nation's capital. How are you, Brad?
Doing great, Matt. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. And we're also joined today by biologist and Wildlands filmmaker, Neil Paprocki. How are you, Neil?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. So we're going to start off by asking a few questions of you, Brad. We're looking to hear a little bit more about this film festival that you're a part of. Maybe you can start off by giving us a little bit of background on the Environmental Film Festival in the nation's capital.
Absolutely. So I've been with the festival for about 3 years now, and as you mentioned, as the program director, I'm in charge of kind of managing the film submission process, the review process, and the selection process. And so every March, we have a festival here in Washington, D.C., focused on screening environmental films. So the festival itself was founded by Flo Stone in 1993. And she began the festival kind of with this idea of a collaborative model. So for the past 24 years, the festival has worked with partners here in Washington to screen environmental films at just a wide variety of venues. We have about 50 different venues this year, and includes universities, museums, we work with Smithsonian, embassies, and then commercial theaters all throughout the Washington, D.C. area. So we're looking forward to another great festival, and this year it's going to run from March 15th through the 26th, and we'll be screening about 150 films this year.
Fantastic. So this is a big event. I mean, a 10-day festival, lots and lots of screening venues, over 100 different films screening, like you said.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from the large size of this event, I mean, what in your mind makes this event stand apart from other environmentally themed film festivals?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, one of the great things is this collaboration, this model of 50 venues spread out throughout the city. And so in doing that, you know, it does provide us with a wide variety of people attending. So, you know, you have at embassies, you know, you have more of an international audience. Obviously, at universities, you know, we get a younger crowd there, you know, feeding into the student population. And then the museums, the same. You know, we have student films and children's films at some of the museums in our programs. So I think having that collaboration, having that model where we are working with other organizations, and typically we'll work with about almost 100 organizations throughout DC as well, in addition to these venue partners. So I think that makes it very special. I think another thing, you know, we do have a very it is a very broad, you know, definition of the environment. But a lot of the themes, you know, include oceans, wildlife, of course, climate change, and then, you know, conservation is a big theme too. And so this year, kind of in conjunction with the 100th year anniversary of the National Park System, we will, you know, collaborate and work with the park system in having speakers, and then about 20% of our program will be focused on parks protecting wild. So we will have about 30 or so films on that topic. So in general, you know, a lot of the themes and a lot of the films that we show, it's great to be able to connect with other people here in DC, and, you know, they can help us out having discussions following films and things like that. So yeah, I think that's a really, you know, unique model.
So I'm wondering if the presence of the event, you know, in our nation's capital means that these films, you know, have the ability to have a direct impact on policy decisions.
Yeah, and you know, I think that it definitely does, and I think that is another draw for the festival. You know, another thing that I appreciate about the festival, I mean, obviously, a film itself can really resonate with an audience in and of itself. If it's a good story with compelling characters, you know, relevant message, but the thing that also kind of, I think, sets the festival apart is the conversation afterward. And so one of our priorities is to bring in filmmakers, and also to bring in authorities. I mean, Washington, here in Washington, we have policymakers, we have authorities on a lot of subjects related to the environment. And so, you know, one of the priorities is to bring in filmmakers and also to bring in these other folks, because just as much as a film resonates, I think a discussion, you know, following the film is a nice, you know, the film really is a springboard to that discussion. And so from that discussion, you can get into, you know, action campaigns and things like that, that I know a lot of filmmakers now, especially environmental filmmakers, are interested in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems to me like, you know, the location where you guys are at in Washington, D.C., you know, there is this great potential, right, to
absolutely
for the message in a film to have an impact.
Definitely.
So maybe you can tell us a little bit more about how you got involved in the D.C. Environmental Film Festival. You mentioned that you've been working for the festival for 3 years. You know, maybe give us a little bit of background on, you know, what were you doing beforehand and what led you to this position?
Absolutely. So my background was actually in journalism. I started in journalism and then became involved with documentary filmmaking while I was in school. And so I started kind of making my own films, and that kind of led me to Washington, D.C., and I attended George Washington University and went through a program there on documentary filmmaking, and so I started making independent films and then became a videographer and freelanced here in Washington, and so it was during that time that I, you know, met a lot of filmmakers, and I met a lot of people who were doing some interesting things with film in the D.C. area, and that led to the position at the festival. So it's been a great chance for me. I'm kind of coming in from the filmmaking side. So it's interesting now to see that other side, because, you know, I had submitted films to festivals prior to working there. So it's interesting to see that angle, you know, as a filmmaker and the selection process and what goes into all the management.
Yeah, you know, it really is. And it's interesting. I'm actually kind of going through something similar right now. I'm helping organize a new film festival in partnership with a local land trust here in Boise. And so we're actually gearing up for our first, the first year of this new film festival event. And, you know, so me for the first time, you know, same as you, coming from a background as a filmmaker, you know, I'm watching all these film submissions and seeing how it works, you know, learning how the judging process works and how you select these films. And it's really interesting to be on the other side of it as someone who is, you know, only been, you know, on the opposite side, like you said, submitting films to these festivals.
No, there is a lot of detail involved, and like you said, it's a lot of watching reviews, and there are lots of great films out there too. So, you know, it's a difficult process.
It is. It's an extraordinarily difficult process. You know, we actually just went through our film selection process for our event. And yeah, I mean, we had to say no to some films that I really thought were strong films. And that's not easy to do.
Right.
So I mean, that kind of leads us into, this topic of the judging process, right?
Right.
And sort of how that works. And, you know, I think it's a little bit different for every film festival, but, you know, I think our listeners would definitely be, you know, sort of keen to hear about, you know, how the judging process works for this film festival, for the DC Environmental Film Festival.
Yeah, absolutely. So we opened up film submissions this past year in June. And so basically from June to the middle of November, we received about 1,400 submissions. And every week we reviewed the film. And so we had a kind of a committee of offsite screeners who would watch film and rate the films. And then the high-rated films from that group would then bump up to our programming committee, which was a smaller group, including myself and other programmers on staff. And we would watch these films and every week discuss them and select them. And so that's how we chose, you know, a good portion of the films for the program. And of course, our submissions are free. And so, you know, there is great access there as a filmmaker, and we watched every, you know, every single film that did come in some way or another. So the other thing with the festival, we also have a selection for awards, and so we have four awards at the festival, and one of these awards is the Eric Moe Sustainability Film Award. And so this was an award established in 2014 by the Moe family, and they are friends of the festival, and it was established in memory of their son Eric. And Eric had a very strong interest in film and a commitment to the environment and sustainability. And so that's, you know, that's where Bluebird Man kind of comes in, your film, and out of, you know, we had a separate submission process for this award. And it is an award for short film. And out of 200 plus submissions, about seven were taken to a jury, and then Bluebird Man was selected as the winner of that process. And so we're thrilled, you know, we're thrilled to be showing your film, Matt Neal. And it's, you know, again, it'll be during the festival on March 17th at 7 o'clock, and it's at one of our signature venues, Carnegie Institution for Science. So I'll have you guys talk about the film a little bit, but yeah, we're thrilled about that. And as far as the other awards, it's kind of a similar process. We do have a jury selection process for those as well.
We are going to sort of pivot this discussion here in a few minutes, and Brad, let you kind of ask some questions of Neil and myself about our film Bluebird Man. But, you know, I am curious to hear, just in your opinion, you know, what made our film Bluebird Man sort of stand out? You know, what do you think makes it a good fit for this award, the Eric Moe Sustainability Award?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, one of the things we always look for, honestly, is a good story, a compelling character, and a relevant message, a relevant issue. And, you know, I think the one thing that we were all taken with was just, you all found just such a compelling character in Al Larson and what he's doing as a citizen scientist. And it really did resonate. I mean, just such a charming man and such a great character. And that's one of the things I'm curious about too, is just how you all found him. Because I think, you know, with any message, just finding that just universal element, or finding that person that really does stand out, that says so much as far as kind of getting a message across. And in this case, you know, this conservation message and the impact that he's had, you know, in trying to prevent the decline of the bluebirds. So that was, you know, that was a big thing. I mean, in this decision process, I know that was a great thing. I mean, it's a wonderful story. It's great filmmaking. So production value does come into the process as well, but once you get past production value, story and character is so important.
Well, that's definitely good to hear, you know, and that's something that we talk about a lot, is the importance of storytelling, and how that is sort of more important than anything else, right? More, like you
right.
said, more, I mean, it's important to have that production value, and but, you know,
right.
if you have a compelling story, that will trump everything else as far as your film is concerned. So just to reiterate here before, Brad, I let you sort of jump in and start throwing some questions at us about Bluebird Man, Bluebird Man will be screening at the DC Environmental Film Festival on March 17th at the Carnegie Institution of Sciences. We couldn't be more excited about this screening event. Sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. And Brad, yeah, it sounded like your first question was maybe going to be just sort of about how we first became connected with Al, how we sort of found out about this character in the film.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, how you found him and how did the film project kind of begin?
I'm going to let Neil take that one.
Sure. Yeah, I can take that question. It was kind of a funny little path that we traveled to, you know, stumbling upon Al and his story. I mean, at the time, Matt and I were both living in Boise. And Matt, you'll have to, was this in 2012?
Yeah, I think it was 2012 when you first went out with them, because it was, yeah. We shot the film in 2013. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was the summer of 2012, and I was, at the time, I was getting my master's degree at Boise State in raptor biology, and my advisor, who was on the local board for the local Audubon chapter, the Golden Eagle Audubon Society, she told her grad students about this guy Al, who had, you know, who was monitoring bluebird boxes in the Owyhee Mountains, which are outside of Boise, and she just kind of threw it out there to us that, hey, you know, he's doing this, and if you wanted to go out and kind of see the whole process of him monitoring bluebird boxes and banding nestlings and all that, it, you know, this would be a great opportunity to go out with him. And, you know, me and another grad student said, sure, yeah, I mean, that sounds great. You know, I'd seen bluebirds before, but not so many and not really up close. So I said, sure. And so we went out with Al, and it was the first time I'd met him. And we went out and kind of kicked around with him on his bluebird trail for the day. And it was, I mean, I was immediately, I mean, Brad, you mentioned just how, you know, interesting of a character he is and how just how strong of a character he is. And I was immediately taken by that. I mean, the first day we were out, he told us, you know, essentially his entire life story, starting from, you know, him growing up in Jordan Valley as a small kid near the Oregon border, and then serving in World War II, and how he's got started on the Bluebird Trail, like all, you know, all this really amazing and interesting stuff. And I came back from that. I mean, I think I immediately told Matt, like, man, this guy is really interesting and would make a really interesting, you know, character in a movie. Not really thinking that anything would come of that. It was just kind of something to say, because I'd had a really good day out there with him. And then I think I went out with him maybe one more time in 2012, because I'd had such a good time the first time. We went out again and just, you know, again, had a really great time. And then Matt and I kept kind of talking about him and his story and the story of bluebirds and that conservation success story. And we had just finished up the first documentary that Matt directed, called Scavenger Hunt, which was about California condors. And we were kind of looking for that next big project to take on. And, you know, this was one of those ideas that we were kicking around. And you know, we kind of decided to go for it. We talked to Al about it. We said, hey, we're thinking about making a film about you and about bluebirds. What do you think about that? And I don't think he hesitated for one minute. He said, that's great. You know, he's a filmmaker too, so he kind of knows, he's into that kind of thing, and he knows that world a little bit just from doing kind of amateur videography himself. So he said, sure. And that was kind of it. And Matt and I just went for it. And you know, it was the next year in 2013. We spent a lot of time with him out on the bluebird trails, you know, shooting every time we went out. Sometimes we didn't shoot. We just went out with him just because it was a fun thing to do. So we spent a lot of time out with him that winter, or that summer of 2013. That was kind of the start of it.
Oh, that's great. And so as far as, and that was a question I had too, was about his, you know, how comfortable he was with the idea, with the notion of being filmed, because he looks very comfortable, on film too. So as far as, you do see some kind of archival footage in the film too. So was that Al's footage then of things that he had shot previously?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's interesting. Like the reason that he started working with Bluebirds was actually because he was into film and photography. Like he tells us that he, you know, the first Bluebird boxes he put up were near his house, and the reason he put them up was like, oh, I could put this Bluebird house up and get birds to come really close, and I can get really nice pictures of them and take really nice video. And so kind of the reason he started was because he wanted to take some video and get some pictures of bluebirds, and then it kind of morphed into this larger thing where he was more doing it for the birds and doing it to be outside and get away from town and all of that. It was, you know, really interesting how he kind of came about doing that.
Yeah, and I'll just add there that, I mean, it's really nice to be working with a main character in a film who has a background in videography and photography, you know, and who knows what it's like to be behind the camera. And I think that really helped the film, obviously, because we had access to all of this archival footage that Al shared with us. But I think it also helped because, you know, Al sort of knew where we were coming from. And, you know, I think that helped make him more comfortable on camera. I think the other thing that, you know, which Neil mentioned that, you know, made him very comfortable on camera was the fact that, I mean, Neil and I became good friends with him, you know, and I mean, we weren't shooting footage every single time we went out with him. You know, we sort of, when we took on this project, you know, partly it was to tell, you know, the primary goal was to tell Al's story in a documentary, but, you know, we also just got to know him and became friends, and, you know, we wanted to see this project of his, which has become his life's work, continue. So, I mean, that's something that we're continuing to work towards. I'm actually on the board of directors for that local Audubon chapter now. I just joined that board. We're trying to help lead an initiative to ensure that Al's Bluebird Trails continue. Al reaches a point where he's no longer able to monitor and maintain them himself.
Yeah, and that was another thing too. I was interested in was, first off too, just the impact. Talk a bit about the impact Al has had, you know, just as a citizen scientist, in helping to kind of reverse this decline in bluebirds. Because I know the other part of this is he started doing this in retirement. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, he did. He didn't start doing this until he was in his 60s, and I mean he did start doing it before he retired, but he really didn't go kind of to the level where he took it until after he retired. I mean, for a while he was doing it, you know, he was working, he worked at a sawmill, and he was working at the sawmill, and then he was going out after work and checking the bluebird boxes and putting in just, you know, crazy long days. But then, you know, after he only did that for a few years, and then after he retired, he really kind of jumped into it and kind of took it to another level of, you know, over 300 boxes that he was monitoring after he retired.
Well, as far as from the kind of the filmmaking angle too, I know people are always interested to hear how long it actually takes to, you know, to produce a film. So how long in this whole process, how long did it take for you all to create this short?
It was about a year start to finish.
Yeah.
And that's, it depends on what you consider, you know, a part of the process, right? Because, you know, like Neil mentioned, you know, Neil went out with Al a couple of times the year, you know, the summer before we started shooting. And he did, you know, Neil did shoot a little bit of footage, you know, sort of just enough for us to cut together a trailer to, you know, do some fundraising, that summer before. But, you know, if you start, you know, basically the beginning of production, you know, we started shooting in February of 2013, and the first stage of distribution for us was airing the film on Idaho Public Television, and I think that happened in April of 2014. So, I mean, just about a year from when we started production, we had a finished film, which I thought was a pretty good turnaround time, considering it took me almost 5 years to finish my first film.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, and, you know, and we're thrilled to screen this in DC. And I guess the last thing I had too was just it overall, like what do you ultimately kind of want audiences to take away from the film?
I mean, something that I would like them to take away. And I mean, Brad, you asked the question of, well, you know, what role did Al have in the recovery of this species? And I mean, he certainly played a role, but he's not the only person that's been doing this. I mean, there are literally hundreds of other people across the United States who are doing this, the same thing that Al's doing, putting up bluebird boxes and helping to address those declines that had happened a number of years ago. And now bluebirds are doing quite well. So I think what I would have people take away is, I mean, the fact that it is a conservation success story, and that just these every, not just Al, but all of these other everyday people have helped contribute to, you know, the success of successfully recovering this species. And it's, you know, even if you're not a researcher or a scientist or a biologist, I mean, anyone can have an impact in helping to save a species if they, you know, put their mind to it and really want to do that.
It really is. I mean, like Neil said, I mean, you know, our decision to follow Al, you know, we really wanted to sort of use Al as an example of, like, you know, look what happens when one person just dedicates themselves to this one project, you know. And that's something that Al talks about a lot too, you know, when we go out on the trails with him. He talks a lot about, you know, how important it is for people to stick with a goal, you know. I mean, he's been doing this upcoming spring, I think, will be the 38th year that he's been monitoring these bluebird nest box trails. I guess talking about how, you know, one individual truly can have an impact on an ecosystem. And you don't have to have a lot of money. You don't have to have a lot of connections or influence. You just have to have that perseverance and that commitment to the project.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we're, like I said, you know, we're looking forward to this March 17th. And it's also going to be great, you know, to have Al at the screening. And I know that our audience is going to, you know, love kind of the dialogue after the screening as well. And and thank you all for making this film. I mean, we're excited to screen it here in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, thanks a lot to you, Brad, for everything you've done and for selecting our film to be a part of this really
Definitely.
Amazing festival. I'll just say that, you know, I am equally as excited as you are that Al is coming to this event. You know, I think, Brad, when we first talked about this, when you first, you know, called up Neil and myself to let us know about this, that we'd received this award, you know, I think one of the first things you asked was, you know, can we get Al out to D.C.
Right.
to this event? And I think my response was like, doesn't seem all too likely. And I mean, the reason for that is that, you know, Al has in the past has specifically told me that he's done with plane travel. that was a conversation that we had in the past, right? But I just think, I mean, I think Al was really touched that by the fact that this film received the award and by the recognition that he is getting for his project, you know. And Al is, he's the most humble of men, you know, very soft-spoken when it comes to, you know, sort of giving himself credit for the work that he's done. But you can sort of tell in this very subtle way that he is very touched by the amount of recognition that he is getting for this project of his. So, it will be a lot of fun to travel out to D.C. with Al and attend this screening.
Fantastic. Well, thank you all again. And you know, that humble nature too is so well reflected in the film. And just going back to, you know, your other point, it's also fantastic to just have a positive message coming from this, that people are getting out there and this is something that people can do. There is an action following this message. You can go out and you can do this, and Al's a great example.
Yeah, absolutely. It's important to celebrate our conservation success stories, and that's what we hope.
Yeah.
That's what we hope to do in this film. Well, thanks a lot, Brad, and thanks Neil for coming on the show today. And Brad, thanks for kind of flipping this thing around and becoming the interviewer for the second half of this. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. Thanks, Neil.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Thank you, Brad.
All right, that was our conversation with Brad Forder from the Environmental Film Festival in the nation's capital. Of course, it's always wonderful to get this kind of recognition for a film, and we're extremely honored that Bluebird Man was selected for this top award. It's also great, however, to have the opportunity to chat with someone like Brad, who oversees the entire selection process for our country's largest environmentally themed film festival. Brad talked about one aspect of the selection process that I will reiterate here, the utmost importance of good storytelling. Good storytelling trumps everything else, especially in this new era of filmmaking where just about anyone can achieve that high production value look. The ability to craft a compelling story and develop interesting characters is the single most important task of any filmmaker. To learn more about the Environmental Film Festival in the nation's capital and our screening of Bluebird Man at the event, check out the show notes page for this episode, which you can find at wildlensinc.org/EOC58. This episode was produced by myself, your host, Matt Podolsky. Our theme music is by The Humidors.